Political correctness run amok. That's our topic on this portion of Vocal Point and other points that are brought out in a new book called The Beginning of Wisdom. The author of that book is Dennis Ayers. He is a lawyer. He's also a retired hospital administrator, and he joins us now on Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and Dennis Ayers, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate that.
And thank you for having me today.
Sure. And we'll get right into the subject of political correctness run amok. But first of all, just give us a quick overview of this book, The Beginning of Wisdom. What is it? Why did you write it? And then we'll focus on this, what you call rejecting the devil's etiquette. But go ahead and give us an overview. What is this book about?
When I retired in 2010, I had time to think, and but the big question I had at that time was, why are things happening the way they are in our society and culture? Why are we making the decisions that we make? And that started, I'd always thought that I wanted to write a book, but I'd never had time. And now I heard that small voice tell me, well, you've got time now. And I got into this book, and the book is about literally everything that matters. Based on my experience as both an attorney and an executive, I tried to write a book on everything that I thought that could be a potential reason where people were perhaps making mistakes or going in the wrong direction, or areas where perhaps at one time or another I had made a mistake or gone in the wrong direction.
But the main point is that, I mean, obviously the phrase itself even comes from the Holy Bible, the beginning of wisdom. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. So everything gets back to God and the Bible, correct?
Yes. Our Judeo-Christian heritage is the foundation not only of the United States, but Western civilization. And as we have gotten further away from that, we have drifted more into cultural chaos.
Yeah, very, very well put. Okay, so let's talk about political correctness, and I want to start by asking you about the title of your particular chapter on that issue. You called it Rejecting the Devil's Etiquette. Can you explain what you mean by that, and how does this relate to political correctness?
Well, political correctness basically started as an attempt to be polite, to be nice to groups and individuals that were felt to have somehow been disadvantaged. It was supposed to be a good thing, but as it's turned out, we now see that it's in fact an evil thing, and what was intended to be a new form of etiquette is more appropriately the devil's etiquette.
Keep going. Why do you say that?
And, well, to go back to a famous quote from the Bible, Isaiah 5:20-21, "Woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who substitute darkness for light and light for darkness, who substitute bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. Woe to those who are wise in their own eyes and clever in their own sight." That pretty much sums up political correctness. We live in a time when there's a substitution of cute or sanitized euphemisms for behavior traditionally deemed socially unacceptable, and the subtle or not so subtle denigration of behavior traditionally viewed as commendable. And this is in academia, in the liberal pulpit, and throughout the media culture. It effectively silences, shuts down, and excludes the legitimate concerns, contributions, and wisdom of the ordinary people of daily life who arguably know our culture best. Political correctness often permits those with the least practical experience in how life really works in the real world to control everything. Edmund Burke noted that when people are too much confined to professional or faculty habits of a narrow circle, they are disqualified for whatever depends upon a knowledge of mankind, on experience in mixed affairs, and on a comprehensive connected view of the various complicated external and internal interests which go in to the formation of a state or culture.
Can you translate that? I mean,
well, political correctness is proceeding out of academia and the upper echelons of bureaucracy and government. And those people basically live in a bubble and are not really all that familiar with how the real world works. I don't mean that they do not have problems of their own and experience stresses of their own, but those are radically different worlds from construction, commerce, the day-to-day life of average citizens in the real world. And what Edmund Burke was saying is when you're confined to just those circles, you don't really know how the real world works, and you're not really qualified to make huge changes in society.
I see. So it's kind of like the phrase, the liberal echo chamber. Just like last year, there was an engineer from Google who loves his company, Google, and he wrote a memo saying, we don't have enough women engineers, and I would like us to see more women engineers. But I want to start by observing that there are biological differences, perhaps, between men and women. And if we understand those differences, we can start with that and then work towards getting more women to become engineers, you know, Silicon Valley type engineers, you know, working with the computer algorithms and that kind of thing. Well, he stepped on a third rail by suggesting that biologically there were differences between men and women. And the guy was crucified. He was hounded out of Google, and he eventually sued him because he felt this, he was unlawfully terminated. And I don't think he's won his case, but the bottom line is he just felt so bad. He did not mean harm in any way, but he was totally mistreated because he was, boy, was he politically incorrect.
That's absolutely correct, and there have been a number of horror tales of that nature over the past few years, and I mean, he was merely saying the truth, and the truth is the first virtue to die at the hands of propaganda.
Wow.
And political correctness is nothing less than subliminal, liberal, secular propaganda backed by the coercive power of much of academia, the media, and the federal government. It sows ignorance throughout our society and our culture.
Wow. Are you concerned about the future of America?
Yes. I don't know if many people read it anymore, but George Orwell wrote a book entitled 1984, and it was a chilling take on the future. And it seems that our society may be moving in that direction a little bit more every year. Right now we're in a reprieve because our president doesn't share those values. But if you think about it, those who've lost their way in our culture have securely bound both our history and our Judeo-Christian heritage in a Gordian knot of error that's proven virtually impossible for even the previous leaders who wanted to tackle it to untangle. Our current president is disdained because he simply sliced through that knot with reason, logic, and truth, much as Alexander the Great is said to have done with his sword on the original knot of legend.
Huh. So, boy, we really are in a culture war in this country. I think one phrase that Richard Land, president of Southern Evangelical Seminary, has given us is so apt: the divided states of America.
Well, it's a cultural war, but even more so, it's a spiritual war.
Yeah.
Right. The forces of political correctness are literally at war with Christianity and our Judeo-Christian heritage, and even the Bible itself, which is all too often now being referred to as hate speech. There's a real fear that ministers may eventually be silenced and afraid to preach the true word of the Gospels in their churches because of it being termed hate speech.
Well, I
in
think...
Great Britain, they're all already way along this path.
Yeah, and I do think that one of the things that's happened is there's a lot of self-censorship among a lot of pastors. I remember writing a column many years ago, where have all the bold pastors gone? And some of them, in some cases, have been afraid of IRS status or whatever, and they don't realize, you know, Matt Staber, who's an attorney for Christ, he's a founder of Liberty Counsel. He's often said that, the IRS does not take away the tax exemption status of churches and, you know, by and large, and only one church lost that status for one Sunday only for violating their rules. So we really need to be bold and you know, obviously not preach politics, but certainly we need to preach morality. And if that has political implications, then so be it. So be it.
Well, in revolutionary times, the ministers actually preached politics along with religion. I think many ministers are just tired of fighting the fight, and perhaps political correctness is a convenient excuse. Jeremiah in chapter 5, 30 through 31, had a famous quote, "An appalling and horrible thing has happened in the land. The prophets prophesy falsely, the priests rule on their own authority, and my people love it so."
Ooh, wow. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's become a major problem in many denominations.
Let me ask you a question. You have a chapter in this book called The Bonfires of History. What is that about?
One of the problems we have in our culture today is there are many pundits and even ministers that are seeking to convince us that God did not really say what he appeared to say, or that his story, promises, wisdom, and commandments are not necessarily to be taken literally. Every age and period of time has tried to keep the common man and woman from reading the scriptures for themselves, or failing that, to destroy our belief in the veracity of the scriptures. There's also an attempt through many liberal historians to redefine how our nation was founded. One of the major points of attack has been to try to define George Washington as a deist or even an atheist, when in fact nothing could be further from the proof. And this was illustrated by Dr. Peter Lilbeck and Jerry Newcomb
and
their book, George Washington's Sacred Fire,
in
which they definitively established that George Washington was an avowed 18th century Anglican with the same understanding of religion that we have today. And they did this because with access to the computer, they were able to review virtually everything George Washington had ever written or said, or the things that had been written about George Washington by people who knew him or knew those people.
All right, we're out of time. So I need to stop at this point. But so basically, the overall thrust of your book is it's kind of this culture war, spiritual battle that we're in. It's faith versus unbelief is the bottom line. Dennis Ayers, A-Y-E-R-S, author of this book called The Beginning of Wisdom. Dennis Ayers, thanks again for being with us. All the best to you.
And thank you.
Okay, God bless. Bye-bye.